and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
I have a perspective at 60 years old that matters to me and the history of our nation, and more specifically, the history of our people.
Former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. is back in the public eye, seeking a presidential pardon for himself and others.
So when we talk about the red line extension, they're like, yeah, right. It's not going to happen.
But it is going to happen. The red line extension project begins in 2025. We look at residents' hopes and concerns. And we kick things off tonight with an extensive conversation with former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. in a conversation recorded earlier.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Jesse Jackson Jr., the namesake of his father, civil rights icon Reverend Jackson, had a storied career, serving 17 years as an Illinois congressman before his fall from grace in 2012. He spent 30 months in federal prison after pleading guilty to conspiring to defraud his reelection campaign of close to $750,000. That was over a decade ago. While he's been out of the spotlight mostly in that time, he's speaking out now. In particular, he's drawing attention to President Biden's recent pardon of his son, Hunter, asking for the same for himself and many others. Joining us now with more on his journey is Jesse Jackson Jr. Welcome back to Chicago Tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Brandis, thank you for having me.
So in a letter to President Biden, as we mentioned, your father, Reverend Jackson, wrote, quote, I write to you today to respectfully urge your consideration for a full and absolute pardon for your son and for mine, former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. He has devoted his life to what he refers to as his ministry to public service and to fighting for equality and equity in civil and human rights for all Americans. What would a pardon mean for you, both personally and professionally?
It would change the course of my life. It would be the official act by the President of the United States on behalf of the American people to say that you are forgiven. But not just forgiven, I'm asking for it. But I didn't ask just for myself. When I was released from prison, I did not file for a pardon application. I did not file for a pardon with the Obama administration. I spent my time advocating the Obama administration and subsequent administration for millions of men and women who've paid their debt to society in full to be considered for the President's pardon. And I said at that time that I'm at the back of a very, very long line of Americans who've served time. They made mistakes. They erred in their lives. But that the President of the United States and the Constitution is the only vehicle that can restore their lives. Even when I was exiting prison after I was sentenced, I said, I still seek forgiveness. And I still seek the restoration and the resurrection of my life and the life of others. And I'm still right there.
Why not file for your own pardon or complete your own application at the time? Did you feel it was because it was better to advocate for many others? Why not go ahead and get yours started in the process?
Because we learned just this week that you don't have to file for one. Hunter Biden didn't file for one. Paul Manafort didn't file for one. Richard Nixon didn't file for one, because the process does not require a pardon application. And in fact, to use some of my time while in prison, I was helping men who could not read or write fill out these pardon applications, and I ended up being thrown in solitary confinement because they said I was being disruptive by helping men understand their rights, the right to fill out this application, which ought to be clear to every American right now that it is unnecessary. This is a unilateral, unfettered decision by the President of the United States. Democrats and Republicans have misread it. They've not used it correctly. They've used it to help their friends, their political cronies, and their family members. But it's in our Constitution as a people. It belongs to bus drivers. It belongs to women, to a woman who might have stolen a loaf of bread to feed her family and then was subsequently convicted, tried, and sentenced. It's an act of grace It's the restoration of her life. And in the final analysis, it is the only tool that we have in the Constitution that provides a balance to justice. When a sentence is given that overreaches, that where the punishment is greater than the crime, the President of the United States has something in the Constitution called the finger of God. It is the power to reach into the states. It is the power to reach into the law and balance the scales of justice.
Finger of God, also the title of a book that that you completed that maybe we'll get to a little bit later on. Remind us, you know, some of the challenges that you experience. You know, you're a former congressman, but you also have a criminal background now. Remind us some of the challenges that come along with that.
Well, when I was elected in 1995, I had a big name, but I had no money. I didn't realize quite the gravity of what it meant to live in Chicago and live in Washington. So to the tune of about $75,000 a year, I lived in my campaign. The Chicago news media got it wrong. Jesse Jackson Jr. took $750,000 from his campaign, or even in your opening, $750,000.
Over the course of 10 years. $75,000
over the course of 10 years, $75,000 a year to live in two cities, Chicago and Washington, to go to work every day, to not miss a vote in nearly 17 years. As a congressman, yes, I lived in my campaign fund, and I owned my behavior for that. Lots of members of Congress find themselves in a similar situation. Some of them live in their offices. Some of them live literally in their cars because they live in Maryland or they live in Virginia. But imagine the congresspersons from Ohio, or the congressperson from California, or the congresspeople from Hawaii, very expensive territories. I didn't come to Congress a millionaire. I came there nearly fresh out of college, certainly fresh out of the seminary and fresh out of law school, determined to be of service to my constituents.
And obviously, post-prison, there are a lot of what we call and have done lots of reporting on permanent punishments that follow you around that make life challenging.
Almost impossible to get a job. Someone Googles your name and your name shows up having been through this process. I was doing a radio show here in Chicago not long ago, and a young man called in, well, maybe an older man. His name was Larry. And Larry said he got two tickets from his congressman to visit the White House. He went to visit the White House. He took his daughter. He waited in line for 2.5 hours. When he got through security, the Secret Service asked him to come over and have a seat. He said, "What seems to be the problem?" He said, "Sir, 40 years ago, you committed a crime. 40 years ago. Your daughter's welcome in the White House, but you can't get in the White House." And on that moment, he said, "I'm voting Republican," because he was trying to get into the Joe Biden White House. Is it possible that our system actually holds a conviction from 40 years prior over a person's head? Think about Cliff Kelly at WVON, convicted 50 years ago. Think about Harold Washington, a tax offense, still unpardoned. So I'm advocating for Harold Washington's pardon, I'm advocating for Cliff Kelly's pardon, and I'm advocating for bus drivers and anyone else who needs the grace of God in their life, because at this time in our country, I think we all do.
Some Biden critics say that granting a pardon for political crime sets a dangerous precedent. What do you say to that?
That's exactly what the pardon power is for. They extracted from Matthew chapter 1, verse 17, David and Jesus, commander of the army and militia, and reprieves and pardons. That's the function of the lineage of David. It's the lineage of David vested in one person to balance the scales of justice for the American people. Of course, Joe Biden has the right to forgive his son, but not just his son. There are millions of other sons and daughters who are entitled to the same act of grace, the same grace of God. What we actually elect is not a Democrat or a Republican, but a person in every generation who's responsible for distributing the grace of God, and we need to get back to that if this democracy is going to survive.
In a recent press briefing, I believe it was just this week, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, she commented on Biden's use of presidential pardons. Here's a little bit of that.
The president has so far issued 20 individual pardons and 122 commutations. He's issued more sentence commutations at this point in his presidency than any of his recent predecessors at the same point in their first terms. This is in addition to groundbreaking categorical pardons that the president issued to address marijuana possession convictions, military convictions in the LGBTQ+ community. Pardons are usually done when it's the president's final term, historically around the holidays, and so certainly there'll be more to come.
She says there'll be more to come. Are you hopeful that the president will hear you and your name will be on the list?
Well, I certainly would like my name to be on the list, but I'd like tens of thousands, if not millions, of other men and women to be on the list as well. There are 77 million men and women who paid their debt to society. They went through the entire system. They'd been indicted. They had met a jury. They had been sentenced. They went and served their time. Hunter Biden's never going to see a day in jail. These men and women served their time. They honored the Constitution. They're out. They're driving buses. They're plumbers. They work the third shift. They're working hard trying to sustain their families and sustain their lives. And I made a determination when I did not file for a pardon application that I would be their spokesman wherever I could and whenever I could. Recently, as early as 2022, 2023, Maxine Waters and Reverend Jackson asked me to fill out the pardon application because they felt it would enhance my platform to make the case for universal pardons for millions of people. Google it. Jesse Jackson Jr. asks for mass pardons. I'm the first one to call for it.
Are you planning to file that application to complete that form? Or?
Oh, I filed the application in 2022, and okay. So I wanted to get that off the table so that the administration would not be able to say, well, you didn't complete the process. What process? The one that Hunter just bypassed? The one that others have bypassed? Because the process is another barrier to a man or a woman's forgiveness in our system, and it was not intended to be so when the architects put it in the Constitution on September 17th, 1787.
Let's pivot and talk a little bit about your career. You are a rising star in the Democratic Party from a famous political family, as we know. Talks of your possibly running for Senate or even higher office. What were your ambitions before?
Well, I was honored to represent the people of the South Side of Chicago and South Suburbs. I met a skinny kid with a funny name.
Heard of him.
My sister brought him home with Michelle Obama one year from college, and he expressed an interest in running for the state Senate. I assisted in that campaign after he threw Alice Palmer off of off the ballot, and he asked me to serve as his campaign co-chairman with the late Paul Simon as candidate for Senate of the United States. Only Paul Simon and I served in that capacity, and fortunately, he was elected to the U.S. Senate. Obviously, I served as national campaign co-chairman for his candidacy for presidency. So I've been very generous in my own career in terms of supporting other candidates for higher office. Now I think, Brandis, that I have a new calling, and that is the restoration of human life. I'm almost 60 years old, and wherever I can advocate on the stage that I'm allowed to speak on for men and women who've fallen, who deserve the grace of God in their lives, I'm going to do that.
You've clearly embarked on a return to the spotlight. We just saw a little bit of video of you joining your father and the family at the DNC this summer when he was honored on that first night. You've been speaking out about this issue, obviously, guest hosting on WVON radio. Why now?
Well, why not now? The nation's attention is turning to the pardon power. And the launch of that season is when the turkeys get pardoned. And then you think about the fact that one hunter at this stage of the president's administration, one hunter and two turkeys have been pardoned. That's an affront to God. From my perspective, it's outside the grace of God. The president of the United States should be pardoning tens of thousands of people a week. That's the size and scale of the problem of men and women who need forgiveness and redemption in their lives. And I'm here to remind him of that. I served with Joe Biden when he was in the Senate. I was in Congress when he was there. I watched Joe Biden on the stage with my father in 1984 when he was running for president. So I know the Biden family. I know them very well. And I think I'm well positioned not to hold my tongue, but to tell a truth that the American people need to hear about forgiveness.
Around the time of your conviction, former Illinois Representative Aaron Schock, he also made headlines for similar crimes. His charges were dropped after he repaid those funds. Do you think your case was handled fairly, or is it much different from that of Aaron Schock, being that you're a black man and the son of Reverend Jesse Jackson?
Not only did I repay the funds, but my home within a week or so is already in foreclosure as a result of repaying the funds. And yes, I did time, and Mr. Schock did not do time. And so how do you balance the scales of justice? Well, the way you balance the scale of justice is with the pardon, with the absolute, full, and unconditional pardon, giving people the opportunity to restart their lives over again. It is simply impossible to do it without the pardon. I've applied for jobs at the university level. I have an undergraduate degree. I have a seminary degree. I have a law degree. I have 13 honorary doctorate degrees, and I can't get a job teaching. Now, how much sense does that make after 13 years in Congress and with my knowledge of the U.S. government and the operation of our government throughout the world? It doesn't make sense. And so if I'm going through it, then a bus driver is going through it. A plumber is going through it. A construction worker is going through it. Somebody's child, their life is no different than mine, no better than mine, no different than Hunter's. They need the act of grace in their lives to begin their lives again.
Being Jesse Jackson Jr. obviously carries a significant weight, I imagine. You are your father's namesake, of course. How do you balance whatever expectations, you know, might come with that name with your own personal ambitions and desires?
You know, I accepted a long time ago, Brandis, that my father's friends, I have inherited them. And I've also inherited his detractors and, if you will, his enemies or his frenemies, neither of which I have earned. I've not earned my father's friends and I've not earned his enemies, but I've had to work hard to convince his friends to be mine, and I've had to work to convince his enemies that I'm different, that I work, that I represent people, that I have my own ministry, and that I mean business when it comes to my ministry. And that ruffles some feathers because I'm not little Jesse. I'm not just Jesse's boy. I have a perspective at 60 years old that matters to me and the history of our nation, and more specifically, the history of our people.
What advice has he given you?
When you get knocked down, you get back up. The ground is no place for a champion. That no test, there's no testimony. That the only time you drown in a storm is if you keep your mouth open. So close your mouth, open your eyes, and start kicking. Tread through a storm. He said storms don't last always. And I remind people that when they go through the storms of their life, that they don't last always.
We all know that your father is famous for some of his Jesse-isms. A lot has changed, of course, since you were a sitting congressman. Donald Trump is set to start his second term as president next month. Now, Trump, in his first term, he also commuted the sentence of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. Trump has been convicted of crimes himself. If not Biden, do you think President Trump is an avenue for you to pursue for your platform for pardons?
Well, first and foremost, let's be clear. My father and I signed a letter to President Trump to commute Rod Blagojevich's sentence. That didn't just happen on its own. We asked the president on behalf of his family to let him out of prison because probable cause in his case simply did not happen. I didn't offer him a darn thing to become a United States senator, and that began my investigation in 2008, and it yielded other things because all federal investigations are wandering. By 2012, they found out that I live in my campaign fund, and I own that behavior. If I were in Congress today, I'd still be living in my campaign fund because it's too expensive to live in Chicago and in Washington at the same time. What I can tell you is that, yes, I'd probably seek a pardon, not for myself from Donald Trump, but for the millions of men and women who need access to the grace of God and forgiveness.
Few seconds left. I know that you have been working in broadcasting, doing some guest hosting, as we mentioned, on WVON. 20 seconds. Is political office out of the question? What's next?
I can't speak for political office, but I certainly enjoy broadcast journalism, and I would love to work in broadcast journalism, whether it's on the radio or whether it's on television.
It's something I know a little bit about, but we will have to leave it there. Former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., best of luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Brandis, thank you for having me.
And we're right back after this. CTA service is coming to the far south side. Construction on the Red Line Extension project is expected to get underway late next year, as long as expected federal funding comes through. In partnership with WTTW News, Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism students explore residents' hopes and concerns about the five-year construction project. Here's Allison Miller.
We thought it was like some type of mythical creature. Like, it wasn't real at one point for us.
People are skeptical. Are we really going to build this project?
So when we talk about the Red Line extension, they're like, yeah, right. It's not going to happen.
But it is. More than 50 years ago, the Chicago Transit Authority promised residents of the far south side a link to the rest of the city. Now, the Red Line Extension project has a date. Construction is set to begin next year, and residents are feeling both optimistic and skeptical. 33-year-old Adela Bass Lawson has heard about the project since she was a child.
Bus cars to our children who leave the community for school.
She's a lifelong resident of Altgeld Gardens, which is just west of the proposed 130th Street stop. The mother of three has mixed feelings about the project.
Transparency is everything, and we hope that the project remains for the community since it's by the community.
Bass Lawson is looking forward to faster travel to the rest of the city, but she worries about whether construction might affect her health.
I have heart failure myself, so it's hard to pinpoint where it came from because it's so many risks around pregnancy, health, genetics, community. We just don't know where it come from.
We caught up with her at the Altgeld Gardens Fall Fest. She's the health equity organizer at People for Community Recovery. The environmental justice organization was created to combat the effects of industry in Altgeld Gardens. The area has been coined Chicago's toxic donut, and research links manufacturing to high cancer rates and birth abnormalities.
We're already a community that has health issues already. Project over time will cause risk.
The CTA says dust and noise are expected byproducts of the construction. The Red Line Extension Committee says it will address these health concerns by working directly with affected families.
We recognize that people may need some extra accommodations for health issues like asthma. People should be able to breathe, for God's sakes.
The Red Line Extension Project will create four new stops beyond the current end of the line at 95th and the Dan Ryan. The stations will be on 103rd Street, 111th Street, Michigan Avenue, and 130th Street. The CTA estimates 38,000 people will use the new stops every weekday. Andrea Reed is the executive director of the Greater Roseland Chamber of Commerce. She's advocated for extending the Red Line since 2009.
You need transportation to get to, you know, medical help, food, services, jobs. Cutting off certain groups of people was done intentionally.
Residents say they don't trust officials because of a history of inadequate transportation.
I mean, it's racism, okay? It is. I think that they expect us in this community to just be okay with things.
Sociologist Lewis McFarland founded a community garden in Roseland, a majority Black community. He created the garden to support Black and Indigenous resilience in gathering. The CTA purchased this garden, along with 50 other properties, to make room for the new stations. He's looking forward to the extension bringing new business to the South Side. But McFarland says he worries that, just like the project uprooted his garden, it may also uproot residents.
I'm very skeptical of these kinds of projects. I wonder if this stop is for the people who are in this neighborhood now, or if it's maybe somebody who's going to replace them in a few years.
Chase says the CTA is addressing gentrification concerns.
You know, we do want to be good stewards and help the city in, okay, what kinds of responsible development can we do that supports the community, not just a high-rise for the sake of a high-rise on a corner.
Despite their worries, some residents remain hopeful about a promise soon to be fulfilled.
We could transform this community into the thriving, bustling community that it once was.
Bass Lawson knows the impact of transportation barriers. She says she was forced to drop out of college because of a 2-hour commute. She says she hopes the Red Line Extension means her children and the next generation of the far South Side won't have to face similar struggles.
And open up a different world for a lot of folks who don't have the necessities to travel out of here, who can't go further because of time constraint. Gives them an opportunity to see the other side of Chicago. It's beautiful that way.
For WTTW and Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism, I'm Allison Miller.
Construction on the project is scheduled to be finished in 2029. CTA spokesperson Tammy Chase says concerns about construction can be directed to her email. That's tchase@transitchicago.com. And we're back right after this. Thank you. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Be sure to check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News, including our holiday events guide. And stay connected with us by signing up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And check out what our reporters are working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. President-elect Trump's border czar visits Chicago and promises to make the city ground zero for mass deportations, what that could mean for Illinois. And thousands of Catholics make the pilgrimage to the Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine in Des Plaines. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.